This is
Good Morning Ottawa. This is The Goods with Dahlia Kurtz on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Ready?
We're live.
We clear?
It's showtime!
I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl who knows what's best. With fingernails that shine like justice. And a voice that is dark like tinted glass. She is fast, thorough, and sharp as a tack.
Good morning. Hello, I am Dahlia. This is The Goods, and this is the 76th anniversary of D-Day at 9:30. And it's really, I cannot tell you the, I don't know what the word is, the privilege, the honor, the feeling, the joy that I get from being able to have conversations with veterans, being able to have conversations with people who have lived on this planet for 9-10 decades, who have been through all of this. And you're going to get to take part in that at 9:30 when our first of two veterans joins us today, Alex Pollowin. I was talking with him a couple of times in the past couple of weeks because we were setting this up. I was learning from him. I wanted to research. I wanted to hear more about his story. And so I spoke to him the first time a couple of weeks back, and I'm talking to him and I'm thinking, are you Alex Pollowin's son? Who is this person? He sounds like a young man. He's completely attuned to everything going on right now. Completely clear of all of his memories, and to have this conversation with him. And then at the end of our conversation, because I'm thinking about this, right? I'm thinking about this 96-year-old man who's been through to hell and back, whom I'm talking to only because of the things that he did and the other people who sacrificed their lives for us. A lot of my family was killed. My family was in the Holocaust. He saved. He saved my family. I wouldn't be here without him. But at the same time, this man is talking to me. And by the way, I call him back this week because we have another conversation. Remembered who I was immediately. Oh, Dahlia, I was just talking to my friend Tim about you. And he asked me to be his friend. And of course, I'm 100% on board, but I'm thinking about this man and I'm thinking about all these other veterans whom we're not gathering for them today. We're trying to be safe because of COVID, right? We did gather for a protest and thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people gathered, and around the world there were mass protests held all over the place that were allowed in the name of democracy. But, you know, we were able to figure out how to do that in the past week, but weren't able to figure out how to give a proper tribute to the very people who fought for our democracy and fought for our freedoms back in 1944 on June 6th. Nobody will be on Juno Beach today because it's not safe. But in 1944 on June 6th, I'm sure it was. But I digress. So I'm having this conversation with Alex, and I'm thinking to myself, he's at home, alone right now. Alex Pollowin is at home alone right now. You know who else is at home alone right now? Robert Spencer, another vet who's going to be joining us, at home alone. After all of these years, after everything they did, and they need to be at home alone right now to save their lives. And the loneliness of that, getting through that, being home alone right now after living a life when they've given so much to so many. And you know what's hardest for these two men about being home alone right now? Not being able to share their stories, not being able to go out and talk to people and share their stories. Both of them told me that. That's one of the most difficult things right now for them to do. One of the most difficult things right now for me to imagine is we don't have the opportunity to get these stories from them much longer. They could be written down and they could be captured on video, but there's always more stories. But they're not always discoverable if you don't have the very people who have those stories embedded in them. And we are running out of time. And if this is where we're at right now for our 76th D-Day anniversary, we've come up with creative ways to have weddings. We've come up with creative ways to have graduations. We've come up with creative ways to have celebrations and anniversaries. We couldn't come up. Nothing from all the world leaders, from all the great minds we have running these countries. There was nothing that we were able to come up with to honor our veterans. We're honoring them here today. I am Dahlia. This is The Goods. It's time for your AM Eye Opener.
Your AM Eye Opener.
Last year at this time on The Goods, I was saying, why don't we shut down the streets throughout Byward Market and make it a pedestrian market? Have people have to park and then they'll come into the market. Guess what's going to be happening? Heading down to the Byward Market. There also wasn't a pandemic last year. Heading down to the Byward Market could be a very different experience for you this summer because the city is potentially closing several major streets to make room for pedestrians and patios. This is Councillor Mathieu Fleury on how restaurants can be helped by this in this difficult time.
The per square foot of a patio was tight before, but with the physical distancing of 2 meters and those restrictions, we need to close the streets to enable businesses to make a bit of money during this period.
So this means that streets like York and Clarence could get closed off to vehicular traffic, which might make your commute a bit of a pain, but it also helps encourage people to support local businesses, especially in this time. And patio expansion could also help fill that gap that's been left by the lack of tourism. And the city has already waived patio fees for businesses. It's permitted expansion onto public and private property to help lift some of the financial burden as well. And other projects like closures on Queen Elizabeth Drive have shown that people will get out and make the most of it if they're given the space to do so. And you don't even really need an excuse at this point to get out now, do you? So Councillor Fleury says that the details on the specific plan should be available by midweek. And we don't know for sure which streets will be closed, but you can already see some visual evidence of restaurants planning in the market down by Zach's Diner at the Byward Market Square. There's a makeshift wooden patio and railing sticks in the street a bit. And a potential look into a summer dining future, going out, seeing people, being around people. This is getting extraordinary. And tomorrow, this is a really big deal here, especially when it comes to the future of our city, because we're talking about the future of our kids. The pandemic means that the annual CHEO telethon will look different, and it's still helping with the same vital care and research to support kids. More than ever, CHEO needs your support. And it's not just because other fundraising events have been canceled because of all of the physical distancing, but kids are facing extra challenges right now. There's the mental health, there are the surgeries that they need. There's so much going on in addition to their health issues that they are faced with right now. And CHEO has a way to help with that. Last week, it's VP of Philanthropy and Community Events, Jacqueline Belsito. She joined us here on the Goods, and she was talking about kids who are missing out on not just school and friends, but much needed surgery, and the perseverance that they have has just been incredible for her to watch.
Well, he looked really sick. He was going to be okay, and he was going to go home in a couple of weeks with his mom. And those are the little fighters, and those are the heroes that we're talking about during the CHEO telethon.
That little hero is a 3-week-old baby named Gibson who didn't look like things were good, but Gibson made it home. And if you want to help other little ones make it home, donations through CHEO's website, CHEO Telethon, sheotelethon.com are being doubled in the lead up to tomorrow's event. So just a little can really go a long way. And sheotelethon.com is where you can go online. But tomorrow you could also tune in to CTV from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. and see the telethon and support life-saving care and research. And Sesame Street is fighting racism in its own way. Anti-racism marches and protests have been happening around the world. And now they're coming to Sesame Street. Sort of. Sesame Street's lovable cast of characters is teaming up with CNN this morning for a one-hour town hall your kids can tune in called Coming Together, Standing Up to Racism. The one and only Big Bird is co-hosting the show, meant to help parents teach their kids about racism, alongside CNN's Van Jones and national correspondent Erica Hill as moderator. In the past, Sesame Street has tackled very serious topics, food scarcity, autism, being HIV positive, foster care, adoption, and they can keep kids educated and informed. And I guarantee you, if you watch back some of those episodes of Sesame Street, you'll realize, oh, that's where I learned that from. And you'll also realize, I'm sorry, Elmo, Grover is cooler than you are. I think the only thing that has made Elmo cuter to kids now is because Elmo has something that Grover never had. Elmo has a big marketing team behind him. I'm Dahlia. This is The Goods. And how a city came together to feed kids as tanks were rolling through the streets and soldiers and officers were shooting at civilians. People still came together for kids. After a parent at Sanford Middle School in Minneapolis reached out to Principal Amy Nelson suggesting ways of getting food to local kids in the district, the educator never imagined what would happen next when people from towns and cities far beyond made a difference in her community. So here's what happened. Many local grocery stores, they were closed because of the protests surrounding the death of George Floyd. So families couldn't even get food. She posts a call out on social media asking for 85 food kits to be donated to help students and their families. The message goes up and everything changes. Sunday morning, she was expecting to start at 10 a.m. and take donations until noon. She gets to the school at 8 a.m. and donations had already poured in. There was more food than she knew what to do with. Piles of groceries mounted. She had to call another organization called the Sheridan Story, who helps with childhood hunger, for help. Then they had to go to social media, and they were flooded with more donations. But this wasn't donations they were asking for, because now this wasn't a supply problem anymore. This had become a distribution problem. People were coming in from hours away to give them food, and then people came in from hours away to help them distribute it. And thousands of families who otherwise couldn't have eaten were given food that day. And that happened in all of the madness that was going on in Minneapolis. Thousands and thousands of families were fed when they didn't think they'd have any access to food, because thousands of people who didn't even live there came to help. Helpers, look to the helpers in times of need. Mr. Rogers, Sesame Street. Should Mr. Rogers, should Sesame Street, should all of these sorts of people, I know Mr. Rogers can't anymore, but should be these be our political leaders maybe? Maybe these are the people that we should be looking to. At least they're teaching our kids. I'm Dahlia. This is The Goods. Still ahead. Coming up just minutes from now, 96-year-old D-Day veteran, World War II hero, Alex Pollowin is going to share his story. And after that, we'll have another vet, Robert Spencer, share the story of what happened after Normandy. The stories that you typically don't get to hear. So on this 76th anniversary of D-Day, while there won't be any public gatherings, We're going to make sure that we give a proper tribute here, but you can continue to weigh in on your thoughts on that. No public gatherings. We could have a protest in the name of democracy, but nothing to honor those who sacrificed their lives for that democracy that we can now exercise. What do you think about that? Tweet me at Dahlia Kurtz. Join the conversation on Facebook. You can call 613-521-8255. This is The Goods on 580 CFRA. It's killing me to see
this way. Now back to The Goods with Dahlia Kurtz on News Talk 580 CFRA.
All right. This is what you need to do right now. I'm telling you. Gather your kids. Tell everybody you know. This could be one of your last chances to hear the story coming up in about, I'd say, 6 minutes from now. 96-year-old veteran landed on D-Day. Alex Pollowin, one of our most decorated World War II veterans we have, who went to shake the Queen's hand. He's going to be joining us just moments from now to share his D-Day story on the 76th anniversary of D-Day. And that war had been a long slog. Canada contributed hugely to the war effort. The public here at home felt it. There was rationing. Sound familiar? But there was also hugging. There was also human and emotional connection we had here, which we don't have right now. But on the other side of the ocean, there was human and emotional toll. Most Canadians likely knew of someone, maybe a family member, maybe someone down the street or from the next farm over who was involved in that war effort. And maybe they went overseas and would never come home. Maybe they came home to share stories like Alex Pollowin. Maybe they wrote stories like the vet who's going to join us after Mr. Pollowin wrote the stories of D-Day, of Normandy. On D-Day itself, there were 1,074 Canadian casualties, with 359 of those killed. And looking back now, D-Day may loom large, but it was just one day in a six-year conflict. It was a symbol. But the Battle of Normandy actually eventually continued for 77 days. And after that, another 6-7 months of brutal fighting against Germans. And we must remember that day because it is a part of a very long, terrible, and costly war that has given us so much right now. And this is a time more than ever when we need to come together to reflect upon that service and that sacrifice and the horror and the tragedy of this war 76 years ago that forever shaped the world we live in, that shaped the world we live in into a place where we're allowed to have protests and have people gather in honor of democracy. But sadly, we have not been able to gather to honor the people who fought for that democracy for us. Our government has not enabled that in any meaningful way. So we're doing the best we can over here on The Goods, and you are going to hear from that 96-year-old veteran, after him, 99-year-old veteran, their stories from World War II, D-Day, Normandy. That's coming up next. I'm Dahlia. This is 580 CFRA.
We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
Winston Churchill. I wanted to replay those words for you today on this 76th anniversary of D-Day. I'm Dahlia. This is The Goods. And while we are not gathering to honor those who fought for the democracy and the freedom that we have today, we will not forget them. And I want you to hear some of these stories. So while many lives would have been lost, many freedoms would have been lost, I'm not even sure I'd be here today without my next two guests, both World War II veterans, will join us today in honor of the 76th anniversary of D-Day, the first of these two sirs. He was born April 15th, 1924 in Lithuania. His family moved to Canada when he was 3 years old. He served in the Royal Canadian Navy as an able seaman from April 1942 until after the war ended in 1945. And for his service in the Second World War, he earned the Atlantic Star, Arctic Star, Diamond Jubilee Medal, the 1939-45 Star, the Russian Peace Medal, the Order of Ushakov, and the only Canadian, or one of the only Canadians to receive, the French Legion of Honor Medal. He also has a street named after him in Ottawa. He served on three warships, was in the English Channel for 7 to 8 months, and he was there for D-Day 76 years ago today, June 6th, 1944, but tells me it was just like it all happened yesterday. So joining me now with the segment that he has titled, he said, I have a title to suggest, and I said, this is it, absolutely, 100%, sir. The Making of a D-Day Veteran. 96-year-old World War II hero who lives right here in Ottawa, Mr. Alex Pollowin. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning. It's a pleasure and an honor to have been given the opportunity to share with my fellow Canadians my experience. And I never want to forget them. It's given me a purpose in my life. I would like to thank Commander Tim Addison of the Ottawa Naval Association for inviting me to join that group. It helped me because at that point in my life, I lost every one of my long-term friends, and the saddest day of my life was I lost my wife. And so Tim came into the act, then I'll call it, and I felt very much that I've gained a new family. It's been wonderful. And I wanna start off and speak about prior to D-Day, what it took, what we did with our ship, HMCS Huron, a tribal-class destroyer named after Aboriginal people. And it was the summer of 1943 when I was part of the commissioning crew. It was built by Newcastle-on-Tyne and built by Vickers Armstrong. It was quite a day, that commissioning. People asked me how did it feel. I said it smelled like a brand new automobile. And we went for evolutions, which meant we were going to exercise every part of our ship, the guns, the engine, torpedoes, depth charges, the steering, everything. Generally takes about 2 months. So we went to Scapa Flow, which is north of Scotland, and we completed all that. And the first bit of work we did, I'm joking when I say bit, we were part of a very large group, and we were chasing the largest Nazi battleship at that time called the Tirpitz off the coast of Norway. Well, we made two or three trips like that, and the interpreter just wasn't there. The British Navy could not correct the time that it sneaked out and went into Western Europe. However, then we were detailed for a new job. Our job was escorting merchant ships to Murmansk, Russia. We didn't go directly into Murmansk. We went into Polyarno. We went through a body of water called Kola Inlet. There were ourselves and our sister ship, HMCS Haida, which still exists at the Floating Museum, just outside of Hamilton. And it was a treacherous trip, journey. It was the worst. And Winston Churchill said so. And just listening to him reminded what he said then, that it was the worst journey one could go on. Anyway, we made two trips prior to 1944. And the last trip that we made, there was a plan. The ship that replaced the Tirpitz was called the Scharnhorst, and it was sinking quite a bit of shipping. And the Royal Navy decided that they're going to try to do away with it and do their best. So they sent our convoy close to the Norwegian coast. Behind us were three British cruisers, and behind them was Britain's largest battleship, the Duke of York. And the plan was to get the Scharnhorst to get after our convoy. And then, after two Norwegian destroyers would fire torpedoes at it, which happened, as they did on the 26th of December, 1943, they fired torpedoes at it, and they hit it. They hit it. And the Scharnhorst began to list, go over on the side. And then the three British cruisers got in there and tackled it and fired and gunned it some more. And then the Duke of York came in there and hit it with one shell. And that was the end of the Scharnhorst. And what a day. You can imagine the stress getting to it. It took 5 days.
Alex Pollowin is with us right now on The Goods, 96-year-old World War II veteran, telling us about his experiences leading up to D-Day and D-Day 2. And, sir, you're telling us about this journey, which is the worst journey anyone can go on. So treacherous. You're a child. You're a young man at this point. What keeps motivating you and pushing you through?
As Dave Brown said, a long time now retired journalist, said, in your lifetime, you will never have a buddy like you had as a shipmate. And I had many of them. Wonderful shipmates that kept your enthusiasm aroused and with the joking and one thing and another, and deep down inside, we knew they all felt as I did, frightened. At any rate, that's what happened. And we made two more trips after that to Murmansk, Russia. And it was almost about the end of that particular problem. And we were so happy we were being transferred over to Plymouth, England for our new job. Our new job was going to be to intercept the Nazi shipping in the English Channel. You see, the roads and the railroads bombed continuously. The Nazis had no other choice but to go through the Channel. And that was our job. There was 10 of us. There was 4 Canadian ships, 4 British ships, and 2 Polish ships called Błyskawica and Piorun. And we wouldn't all go out at the same time, but the scouting that our Allied planes did and naval headquarters did, they knew how many ships were going out simply by seeing how many ships were flashed up, smoke coming from the funnel. That was then. It wouldn't be the same now at this time with all the equipment out. So they'd sent out that many warships. And unfortunately, we lost one of our warships, Canadian warships, HMCF Athabasca, Lieutenant Commander Stubbs, H-34, went down with the ships. And a good number of them were saved, and some were prisoners of war. A lot of them were prisoners of war. That was one of the tragedies. We were fortunate. Prior to the Athabasca being the night before, we were out and we got gunned by an enemy destroyer, and we couldn't be out there. I don't imagine we would have been out there at any rate because our turn was the night before. So the following day, when we got the news about the Athabasca, we were in a state of shock. Many of us cried because a ship is like a family. That's why they call her she. They never call a ship he. They call her she, and the basic reason is because she carries within. It makes a very close bonding between people on a ship and people on other ships, as a matter of fact. It's still part of a greater family. Well, we helped reload the HMCS Haida, which was out there because it expended all of its ammunition, and our leave was canceled, but we didn't mind that. And this continued on and on and on, and by time D-Day came around, our group had sank so many ships and put so many ships out of commission. We were very, very fortunate. It was very frightful. To give you an example, the enemy tried to sneak out at night, and we would chase them at night. And I was on a 24/7 gun, and on the starboard side it was twin mounted, and you'd be ready for action. Suddenly, a parachute would go over your ship with a star shell on it. That star shell would light up the whole area, the whole sky. Can you imagine the feeling then? A moment before, it was pitch dark out. Now the whole sky was light up, and the reaction goes through you. They can see us. They can see us. They can see us. It would run through your mind. And we'd fire back, of course. We'd get busy, and we'd be relieved of a lot of the stress that star shell did to us. And this would go on and on and on. Fortunately for my ship, HMCS Huron, we had a brilliant skipper on there, Herbert S. Rayner, who was a tremendous leader. He was only 34 years of age. He was lieutenant commander. Eventually, he got to be admiral of the Navy. Admiral of the Navy, he grew with it, and he was a wonderful role model. And we kept on going. Then along came, well, I could give you other examples how hard it was for us young seamen.
Before you do, let me reintroduce you because I want to make sure that people remember your name. This is Alex Pollowin joining us on The Goods right now. I'm Dahlia, and Mr. Pollowin is sharing his story leading up to D-Day and D-Day itself from 76 years ago. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I want to give you an example. We'd go ashore in Plymouth. We're happy. We're able to go to a movie. Well, you'd get out of that movie, and this happened a few times. A jeep went through the city of Plymouth with a loudspeaker shouting through there, "All Huron ratings report to your ship. All Huron ratings report to your ship at once." Well, you can imagine a teenager. Most of us were around that age, that a little clique that hung around together. And you can't imagine what went through our minds. Were we being bombed? Was there an explosion? was it part of an exercise to train us because we were under an hour's sailing orders. Well, we got back to the ship, and that's what it really was. It was an exercise. And mind you, some pleasant things happened. Glenn Miller came over with his band over to Plymouth for the American Army. Many thousands and thousands of them were stationed around there, and we were invited out there, so it was kind of reliving my earlier teenage life when I learned to dance. I still can't dance properly, but...
What was your favorite Glenn Miller song? Yes, that's the first person who's ever responded to me with a favorite song with whistling. Of course, Alex Paulowan is the one to do it. That must have given you to hear music in such
It brought it back. It brought it back to a New Year's party I went to with a group of kids, and that's what it do, and it saddened me when Glenn Miller was lost. Glenn Miller was lost.
So but, as you get to have these, I mean, your life then shifted from you're in a movie theater and you know that, you know, you're inside war too, and you get out of a movie theater and you have this massive scare and it's an exercise and you have the joy of Glenn Miller and then you have enemies overhead. Your life was constantly shifting in these emotional waves. That's a lot for
really,
a kid.
Really, really was. But I'll tell you one entertainer that I really loved. Vera Lynn. Vera Lynn was the great British singer, songstress of the war. And one of the jobs we had was to wash down the ship's side, and you'd be in what's called the stage, and you didn't mind the work so much. She sang so gently. She still sings professionally. She is about 98 years of age. Can you imagine?
I can, because you're 96, Alex Paulowan, and you sound like a 50-year-old, and I still don't believe you, sir. I'm going to have to see some ID.
Yeah, well, it's happiness that does that, and people like yourself who bring it out. You know, and I want to give a word of thanks to a couple of people who helped me when I go on the D-Day celebration and celebration on Holland. John Cannon and Larry Day, they've been exceptionally great friends helping me out, because here I am going back alone wouldn't be quite as well. They come as an assistant. Now, to swing back to June the 5th, 1944, it was at night, we left Plymouth, Winston Churchill came on the air, and he spoke about the back of the Nazi was broken, we're going to win, and what a power he was, what a power. Made me feel good. I was confident I was going to come out well. And we had a skipper, Herbert S. Rayner, who was truly, truly very loyal to religion. Not that he spoke about it, but it was always leading us to a neutral prayer, Navy prayer. And part of it I remember, and I'd like to recite that part.
Please.
O Lord, who rulest the ragings of the sea, guard us from the violence of the enemy and the dangers of the sea. Bring us back to the fruits of our land, dear Lord, where we may benefit herein afterwards. Well, I must tell you, the numerous times that we left Plymouth, and each time it rehearsed, you began to believe in it. You began to believe that a greater power was looking after you. And it really and truly made all that a lot easier. And I paid him the greatest respect, and I went to his wake, and I met Mrs. Rayner, and I told her, I mentioned to her what a great honor it was to serve under him. And I felt really good, and I also got to meet his three sons. One has since passed away. So I'm swinging back again to June the 6th.
Can we keep you at June the 6th right now, sir, and we will continue this story? Because Alex Pollowin is with us on The Goods. I'm Dahlia, and he's taking you back to June 6th, 1944, on this 76th anniversary of D-Day. And we're going to have him share that story with you. So gather around, because you do not want to miss it. That is coming up after the news. I'm Dahlia. This is 580 CFRA.